and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we have a great hour for you. We are obviously going to be catching up on the news. We're going to be going through breaches of the week. And believe me, it has been crazy out there the last couple of weeks. And our deep dive is going to be basically the U.S. election security is a complete joke. And bear with me because we are going to dive through so many different facets of why we need to secure our elections. And it's not happening. It's something that nobody should miss. So please stick around. And as always, we're going to start with the news. And in earthquake news, and I actually found this really interesting because I'm wondering here, are too many alerts on problems really leading to user complacency? And the reason why I'm talking about that is more than 500,000 people have downloaded Los Angeles County's, that's Los Angeles, California, their new Shake Alert LA app that basically warns them of impending earthquakes. But when two of the strongest earthquakes in almost two decades hit Southern California at the end of June, beginning of July, those residents were surprised that they literally saw nothing on their smartphones. Their apps did not alert them. The Shake Alert LA did not alert them. Now, what's interesting about this is officials basically were very quick to explain that what ends up happening is the shaking in the county wasn't strong enough to trigger an alert. And so even though these were two of the strongest earthquakes in two decades that Southern California has seen, they weren't strong enough to pop up. So that really begs a question for me. Like, is it better to have too many earthquake warning alerts or not enough? And so what they ended up deciding to do was send alerts for quakes in LA County with a magnitude of at least 5.0 or quakes that occur anywhere and produce light shaking in LA. That was the default. And so these two powerful earthquakes didn't hit 5.0. And obviously, the officials got a ton of blowback on this. And so these were quakes on July 4th and July 5th. And so they agreed to actually lower that mark. And by the end of July, so basically right about the time you're hearing this, they will basically start sending alerts for local earthquakes with at least 4.5 or higher and any quake that results in weak shaking locally. And I think this is actually really interesting, and it opens up a question of, we are literally inundated with alerts. I don't care if you have social media, which one it is, if you're active on it, you're going to get a ton of alerts every day for likes, for friend requests, for messages, for all this kind of stuff. At one point do we become numb to it? And when we are talking about an app that literally is going to be alerting you when there's a serious problem, like an earthquake in your area, or let's say a tornado here in the Midwest or somewhere else, then do we want like every app to alert on the, a stiff wind is blowing through Chicago today, kind of thing, because then we're going to start ignoring the advice that may possibly be life-saving. So where's that balance? I found that to be really interesting. But if you're listening to me in California, and I do have some stations on the West Coast, heads up, guys, your earthquake app may only alert you when you really need to be alerted, and I think we all have to be prepared to run that balance so we don't get complacent, especially in the middle of a potentially devastating earthquake. So that is your earthquake news of the week. And in Face App news, and I'm not saying Facebook, I'm saying Face App. In Face App news, if you are using Face App, for the love of God, please stop using Face App. It is data mining you to the nth degree. Now, if you're sitting here and saying, well, Nick, I mean, we know all these apps data mine us and they take all of this stuff and blah, blah, blah. Let me explain a couple of things about Face App. First, what it does. So if you have Face App, basically, you're going to send it a picture or take a picture through Face App, and basically it's going to put it into its servers, and then it's going to basically say, okay, like, here's a picture of Nick. Now here's a picture of Nick when he looks old. Okay, that's all it basically does. And it became very popular. It's been around for a while, but it actually kind of exploded, I want to say, in the last month or so. But if you read the actual end user license agreement and their privacy policy, they are basically giving the data away to anybody. You're giving them a non-revocable license to use your data in any way, shape, or form. But the kicker to this whole thing is that this company is based out of St. Petersburg, Russia. And that is a very serious problem because we're literally uploading sensitive data to it. It has hooks into your mobile phone, which may be collecting and scraping data in other ways and sending it back up. Now, I've heard the argument when I posted a video on this that went absolutely crazy. I mean, tens of thousands of views across all my platforms on this, that, well, you know, it's all the information is being stored in an Amazon server in the United States. And my answer to that is yes, it absolutely is. So you have this app that, you know, let's say you were sitting here in the United States, they are going to be running, FaceApp's going to be running what's called the CDN or Content Delivery Network. And so they're going to be looking for local servers wherever they are around the globe where they have populations. If you're in Brazil, you're going to go to a server in Brazil. But here's the thing. One, Amazon, being a U.S. company, does not enforce their privacy policies and data regulation as a U.S. company on a company that is outside of the United States. All Amazon does is give you space to do with what you will. You secure it. You set your own policies. If you want to data mine it or not, that is 100% up to you. That is not Amazon's problem. Number two, just because your data is going, let's say for processing, you're uploading your picture to a server in Amazon that is basically owned by FaceApp, and they're crunching all the data to make you look old and all of that, there is absolutely no reason whatsoever that on the back end of that, in other words, that which we don't see but is internal to that company, that they are copying and replicating all of that data out to wherever they want in the world, including to Russia. And now the reason why that's a serious problem is that Russia has basically no real data privacy laws in the same way that the European Union or the United States or Australia or Japan or some other countries have. And so by virtue of it, you lose the ability to have recourse in contacting the company and destroying that data and doing everything else. Now, the company has come out and said, oh, well, we're safe and secure and, you know, we're not going to be data mining you and sending that data back to Russia. And for all intents and purposes, what we see publicly, unless somebody's giving us access deeply into their backend, that's exactly what it looks like. And so if you petition them in the United States to say, oh, well, I want to remove my data from your server, they'll remove it from the US server and then not touch it in Russia. You know, I'm not saying they do that, but they can. They can do that very deeply. And we have seen some very serious issues with this when we are talking about Russian-owned companies. Kaspersky is no longer allowed to have military or U.S. government contracts because we know the Russian government basically got into Kaspersky and turned their antivirus endpoints into remote access devices. So if you're running Kaspersky, you probably shouldn't right now. Now, Kaspersky says they've cleaned this up and all of that, but that still doesn't belay the point, is that this could very well be going on. So if you're using FaceApp or you've got kids that are using FaceApp, just remove it from your phone. The damage is already done if you've sent pictures. I've also heard reports, unconfirmed, of people saying that FaceApp looked like it was cataloging all the pictures in their gallery as well. I don't know if it was doing that or uploading it or whatever it was doing. But just don't use it. Just remove FaceApp from your phone. And the further away you get from the data, the less relevant it becomes. So just remove it. Please, please, please don't use FaceApp. And in Facebook news, and I'm not sure if you guys heard the news on this, but you're going to get my two cents on this. Facebook just agreed with the FTC to go ahead and pay a $5 billion fine for the Cambridge Analytica scandal. For the record, that is absolutely ridiculous and completely pointless. And they actually made money with this fine. And let me explain why. Now, if we are looking at basically like their stock price and all of that, before the bomb dropped with Cambridge Analytica around March of 2018, they were riding pretty high. And then basically around March 20th or so, when Cambridge Analytica dropped, basically came out to the public, their stock dropped something like 30, 40 points. And then it hit a low point just before Mark Zuckerberg testified in Congress. Live, while Zuckerberg was actually testifying in Congress, he gained $3 to $4 billion in wealth during the testimony live, as investors who were watching it closely began to realize that the U.S. Congress has no idea how to basically hold this person accountable, because they have no idea how to actually go ahead and question him on his business, because they have no idea how it runs. And so I actually tweeted at the time, if all of the U.S. Congress had sent their grandchildren to question Zuckerberg, he would have been screwed. And so his stock has been going up and up and up. Now, fast forward to about March or April or so of this year, when it was announced that Facebook would pay somewhere between a $3 to $5 billion fine to the FTC, their stock jumped 10%. And so they have easily made this back. And when it was declared by the FTC a couple weeks ago and Facebook that they would pay $5 billion, their stock went up again because investors say, oh, this is a slap on the wrist. This is a company that is worth almost $600 billion. The first quarter of this year, they made over $15 billion in revenue alone. So a $5 billion fine is essentially chump change for a company this huge. While that number may look massive to, let's say, the non-billionaires of the world, myself included, that is nothing for a company like this. They got away with data mining this. And if you recall, I did a complete deep dive on why Mark Zuckerberg should be in jail for this. Oh, and believe me, I'll be doing round two at some point, probably early next year. So that is absolutely nuts. I think it is shameful. I think they really need their feet held to the fire. The FTC, on top of the $5 billion fine, also said that they had to go through like an independent third-party audit review, which is, again, a complete joke due to another FTC violation that Facebook agreed to in 2011, where the FTC said, due to privacy and data mining concerns, where have we heard that before, that Facebook is going to have to go through an audit every other year, from an independent firm. Where was that? Where was it? Why did Cambridge Analytica happen if the FTC was enforcing this or Facebook was accepting that? That's ridiculous. This is nothing. The wheels keep spinning and it keeps on going. But I think it's absolutely disgusting that Facebook is getting basically a slap on the wrist for violating privacy so unbelievably grossly. And I don't think we really have a concept of just how far that goes. And I'm hoping you have a little bit better of a concept if you're listening to this show. But man, $5 billion is nothing to this company. So that is your unfortunate Facebook news of the week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And I'm going to call this illegal tech news. We're going to start by talking about the Trade Agreements Act in the United States. Now, this is a law prohibiting federal agencies from acquiring products from specific countries. So if, let's say, you're a federal agency that deals with law enforcement or intelligence, you can't be, let's say, acquiring critical infrastructure from Chinese-based manufacturers or Iran or North Korea, and on and on and on and on. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about Fortinet. Now, Fortinet is a major player in firewalls. They are currently one of the top enterprise-level firewalls, I think ranking number 3 right now behind Palo Alto Networks and Check Point. So they're a major player in this. Now, an unnamed employee of Fortinet directed others at Fortinet to include the phrases, quote-unquote, designed in the U.S. and Canada or, quote, assembled in the United States before the products were sold to distributors who then resold them to the U.S. government. Now, the distributor ended up selling Fortinet firewalls to the U.S. military, specifically the United States Marine Corps. Now, what makes this problematic is that Fortinet was manufacturing these firewalls in China, and this employee basically was saying, slap a Made in America sticker on it. It's made in the USA, made in Canada. Canada, obviously, one of our closest allies. We can buy from Canada. And so the distributors were then selling these to either the government or, let's say, to channel partners who would then say, okay, they're not going to know. The distributor's not going to know. The channel partner's not going to know. And then they're selling what they think are certified U.S.-made or Canadian-made firewalls, which are obviously more expensive than the Chinese-made ones, to government agencies that require that. And so Fortinet just settled those charges, basically violating the False Claims Act by agreeing to pay $400,000 and providing the Marine Corps with $145,000 in TAA, that's the Trade Agreements Act, certified equipment. Now, this all stems, the reason why this is coming to light, this all stems from a 2016 lawsuit by Yuxin Fang, who worked for Fortinet in Vancouver, Canada. Fang alleged that Fortinet manufactured its products in Taiwan and mainland China while certifying that those products were actually built in TAA-designated countries. In one case, the security vendor Fortinet resold these firewalls to the United States Air Force. So now we've got two branches of the military. In another case, 32 Fortinet firewalls at roughly $390,000, these things aren't cheap, were sold via a distributor to a reseller and invoiced as quote-unquote TAA-compliant inventory when these firewalls were exclusively produced in China. Now, Fang alleges that he was told by his superiors to quote-unquote rework shipments of products, which he understood as relabeling products that had a Made in China logo on it. Fortinet said the settlement was a result of an isolated incident with a rogue employee. So, if you are in the government and you have a Fortinet firewall, you may actually want to check with Fortinet to make sure that it is, in fact, TAA compliant, and they should be able to hopefully track that down for you. But that is a serious, serious problem, especially due to supply chain hacking. We've seen incidents before where, you know, somebody walks into a... Or breaks in. The Chinese government had broken into a manufacturing plant for a company called Supermicro. This was the allegation, according to Bloomberg, and inserted processors into these servers that were being sent to like Apple and the Navy and a whole bunch of others so that they could eavesdrop. And if we've got, let's say, enterprise level firewalls being manufactured in China, that is the fear. That's why the Trade Agreements Act comes into play, and they have to be manufactured in the United States or an allied country in the TAA. And that is primarily to ensure supply chain hacking doesn't happen. So we'll see where this goes. But if you have a Fortinet firewall and you're in the government, heads up to you. And that is your illegal tech news of the week. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout-out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout-out on the air. With that, let's begin. And this week's Breaches of the Week is just, once again, absolutely crazy. But I'd like to thank a couple of people before I get going with the breaches, because you guys really helped me out and you saved me a ton of time. So Chris Fallon, Scott Bernstein, Jacqueline Wolf, thank you very much. And if you have a tip, feel free to send it to questions@securityfanatics.com or any one of my direct messages on any one of my social media platforms. You know, it is greatly, greatly appreciated, and it saves me a ton of time. No breach is too small, and if it's local to you, it's important to everybody. So that's the way I look at it, and with that, let's begin. And we're going to start with Equifax. Now, if you remember a couple of years ago, it was basically like an identity theft bomb dropping around the globe, especially in the United States, that pretty much affected every man, woman, and child. And they just agreed to pay a $700 million fine on this. With the lawyer fees and all of that, that's about, let's say, $1.38 for every single person that they affected. That is ridiculous. Quite frankly, it's a little disgusting to me. This is a company that should have been put out of business for gross negligence. And I'm not saying we do that with every data breach. I'm saying we do that with those that handle it very poorly and don't take their security seriously in the way that they should. So Equifax, $700 million fine. You might be eligible for some recourse there. I know there's a submit a claim site for it. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Evite. Now, probably most of you have had some kind of Evite in some way, shape, or form when somebody's throwing a party. They basically just invited over 100 million of us to their recent data breach. That's right. Evite posted that they had a data incident that disclosed that an unauthorized third party had gained access to their servers starting on February 22nd of 2019, and they were actually able to access members' personal data. No financial information or social security numbers, though they were part of the breach. So, in other words, no financial info or social security numbers were part of the breach. And I quote from Evite: potentially affected information could include names, usernames, email addresses, passwords, and if optionally provided to us, dates of birth, phone numbers, and mailing addresses. So if you have anything to do with Evite, and odds are you've probably accepted something from them in the past, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Sprint, but this is actually a Samsung breach. Now, I quote here, On June 22nd, Sprint was informed of unauthorized access to your Sprint account using your account credentials via the Samsung.com Adaline website. The personal information of yours that may have been viewed includes the following: phone number, device type, device ID, monthly recurring charges, subscriber ID, account number, account creation date, upgrade eligibility, first and last name, billing address, and services. Now, an unknown number of compromised accounts through Sprint by way of Samsung were there. So if you have Sprint and you're running a Samsung phone, heads up to you. There's probably millions of you out there. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Lenovo, because there are some large companies in the last couple of weeks that have had breaches. Now, they just confirmed that a quote-unquote high-severity security vulnerability has left users of basically a network-attached storage device exposed to basically anybody that went looking for it. They are estimating at least 36 terabytes of data among all of their devices that they have sold to people have been exposed. Now, that is basically the number that the security researchers uncovered, but obviously it could be significantly more. Now, these researchers found about 13,000 spreadsheet files indexed with 36 terabytes of data available on Lenovo's website that was exposed. And so if you have a Lenovo/EMC network attached storage device for your business, and a lot of you may, heads up to you, you're definitely going to want to get that updated and locked down. Next, we're going to be talking about Urology. They are out of Ohio. They just got hit with a ransomware attack that cost them $75,000 to get their data back, but they were so deep into the system that it took them days to get back online, which is why they're here. They had a data breach that may have affected patient data, although they're not saying that. So if you have anything to do with NEO Urology in Ohio, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about the country of Bulgaria. Their National Revenue Agency, which is the equivalent of our IRS, basically got hit. A person claiming to be a Russian hacker told the Bulgarian media that their group was responsible for an attack in an email sent via a Russian address. Now, this email's author said that they infiltrated 110 databases that contained sensitive data, including quote-unquote critically confidential information. They also claimed that their attack affected 5 million Bulgarian citizens, foreign citizens, and companies. That is massive, because the actual population of Bulgaria is 7 million, so that's pretty much probably every taxpayer in that country. The initial leak only contained 11 gigabytes of data, and they claim that they have 10 gigabytes more, and these records date back all the way to 2007. So if you are, let's say, a Bulgarian citizen now living in the United States, your records may have been affected by that. But basically, this would be our equivalent of the IRS getting hit and dumping all of the personal information for pretty much every taxpayer in the United States. That is a serious problem for Bulgaria, and I hope they get that straightened out. Next, we're going to be talking about the airline Wizz Air. They are out of Budapest, Hungary. Now, they just sent out emails informing customers that they discovered and dealt with, and I quote, some temporary technical irregularity. Now, to err on the side of caution, the airline decided to lock user accounts and force them to change passwords. And they are basically not talking about this, but it seems to be some kind of data incident that they will eventually be forced to disclose because of the GDPR. That's the European Union's rule that forces consumer privacy disclosures from companies like Wizz Air. So we'll see where that's going. But if you use Wizz Air to travel, and they do have a presence in the United States, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a company called NSYNC. This is not the boy band from the 90s. They are a QuickBooks cloud hosting platform, so your business may be running them. Now, they just had a ransomware attack that left customers unable to access their data. And I quote, the attack impacted data belonging to certain NSYNC clients, rendering such data inaccessible. As soon as NSYNC discovered the attack, NSYNC took steps to contain it. This included turning off some servers in the NSYNC environment. So if you're your business is using NSYNC to host QuickBooks for your account, for your accounting, heads up, you may have a slight issue, and I would stay tuned to that. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Slack. This is a communication platform that many people use both for business and personal. It's very popular right now and one of Microsoft's major competitors. Apparently, in March 2015, Slack announced that it had been hacked basically the previous month. So that would have been February 2015. And that a central user database holding, and I quote, usernames, email addresses, one-way encrypted passwords had been accessed. In some instances, phone numbers and Skype IDs were also exposed. Slack said that it had, quote, no indication that the hackers were able to decrypt stored passwords. So Slack says this in 2015, that it reset the passwords for a small number of Slack users, and it confirmed that were affected by the hack. Now, however, the reason why we're talking about this is they recently decided to reset passwords, and I quote, for all accounts that were active at that time, with the exception of accounts that were using single sign-on or passwords changed after March 15th. So in other words, if you've been using Slack since March of 2015 and didn't change your password, Slack has just forced you to do that, and we suspect that the data breach is significantly larger than what Slack had originally said. And, you know, Slack is considered, you know, for the most part, very secure and on the ball. So it's obviously a very major thing for them to go through, especially since they've been very public because they're soon to be publicly traded on the stock exchange. Moving on, we have seen a massive rise in local municipalities, government, school districts, and libraries, as well as colleges being hit. And I'm thinking here that we have a targeted and coordinated effort for this, and I'm going to go through a couple of these right now. So aside from the ones that I reported on my last radio show, we have Arlington County, Virginia. Their payroll system got hit in a phishing attack. New Bedford, Massachusetts, the city, again, they also got a ransomware attack. Gila County, Arizona, they got a ransomware attack. Syracuse, New York, the school district had a ransomware attack. Monroe College, ransomware attack on July 11th. And all of these, again, are in the last couple of weeks. Henry County government in Georgia, ransomware attack. Collierville, Tennessee, ransomware attack. Onondaga County Public Library in New York, ransomware attack. And Louisiana, for the very first time, declared a state of emergency due to multiple cyber attacks on their school districts. So we are seeing a rise basically in the public sector in terms of municipality, government, school district, libraries, colleges, etc. And so if you have anything to do with, let's say, public services in that, you might want to make sure that your local municipality, library, government, etc., is locked down and on top of it with good, especially good anti-ransomware defense, because it is getting absolutely, absolutely nuts. And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.